Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, we're in conversation with Tom Smith. Tom, you're one of the world's most in-demand hairstylists, and I love that the Sunday Times called you the hair voyant. Since colour is one of your main areas of expertise, let's start there. For example, can you offer a quick 101 on things like balayage?
Gosh, well, thank you so much for having me on, Sophie. I love talking about all things hair, and you know, the overlap between our worlds is particularly exciting to me. But you're right, colour is one of the things I'm known more for. My vision really is to bring everything together. So colour, styling, texture, extensions, and now hair regeneration as much as is possible with science. But colour in particular is really specific to the individual. And it's also quite aligned with science, isn't it? Because things are always developing and always advancing. And there are quite a few misconceptions around colour. I mean, balayage is a really great example that you've given, because people seem to get a bit confused about exactly what it is and, you know, what it covers. And the easiest way for me to explain it is the word balayage is actually a French word that means to sweep. And so within hairdressing, as hairdressers, we use that terminology to describe a technique where we paint kind of highlights gradually through the hair. So that's just one small element of hair colouring techniques that we use, but it's been taken on by the media, hasn't it, to be like a look, and the look that it is that kind of slightly ombre, slightly sun-kissed kind of vibe. So there is a bit of misconception around it, but I think that's why visual aids are always the most useful thing when you're going to the salon, because it takes away the need to get the words right.
So Tom, you very kindly offered me a colour consultation ahead of this chat, and we had a lovely conversation over on Zoom earlier on this week. For someone like me with naturally very dark hair, who over the last few years has been using box dyes to colour in the grey, can you revisit what we spoke about in terms of my wish list, which is to completely lighten down a few shades, staying in the caramels and dark honey mid-tones, all those wonderful tones that you described, and ensuring that I cover the greys? What sort of expectations need to be managed when going from, let's say, very dark to very light, maybe vice versa? And, you know, feel free to use me as an example if that helps.
It's a great question, and I loved our consultation, because it was a really quite common challenge that people face is being quite dark haired naturally, perhaps having the introduction of a few white hairs or grey hairs coming in. And then how do you manage that? Because on one hand, you've got darker hair that if you were to colour the hair lighter at all, you're going to get that contrast when the root grows in. And then grey hair, where of course, if you're colouring it darker, then that then contrasts as it grows out. So the best advice I can give someone there is really about introducing lightness into the hair gradually. And we spoke a bit about this, didn't we? The idea of perhaps rather than changing the colour all over, enhancing certain areas with a bit of lightness and a bit of brightness to blend in where those grey hairs cluster together a bit more, which kind of lighten those areas of the hair. So sometimes textural colour can be a better choice than going all over lighter, and it allows you to introduce certain ideas and certain new colour concepts into your hair without committing to a total change.
Yeah, love that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of navigating something that's going to happen to pretty much all of us.
I know.
Can we talk a bit more in depth about grey hair? Because you've got a brilliant YouTube channel that we'll link to in the show notes, and you bust some myths on grey hair, and I think it's really educational. What do people need to know about grey tones?
Gosh, thank you. It's one of the biggest things that is misunderstood or misinterpreted. There's actually, and this might blow your mind, there is actually no such thing as grey hair. So the hairs that we see, that we read as grey hair, they aren't grey at all. They're just without pigment. So the pigment producing part of the hair follicles got tired and shut down. And while the hair continues to grow, the pigment is not being produced in the same way that it was when the hair was, you know, its original colour.
And so he knew. That's amazing.
Sort of terminology, the grey hair comes from the way that the light filters through your natural colour or your, whether it's lighter or darker. And so the reason that some people's grey can look really lovely and creamy and beigey and more whitish, and other people's grey can look more charcoal-y or, you know, slate, or you hear the term salt and pepper a little bit. The reason for that is all down to the fact that there are colourless strands mixed in with hair that is of its original colour. So if someone's original colour was very dark, when the colourless strands, the white hair, the grey hair, whatever you want to call them, when they start coming in, the look is much more charcoal-y and much more of a darker kind of grey, salt and peppery slate kind of tone. Whereas if someone was much blonder naturally, particularly if someone was a redhead naturally, then when the white hairs or the colourless hairs come in through the mix of those lighter, slightly warmer tones, that tends to read as more beigey. And then the more colourless strands that grow in, the lighter and therefore whiter the hair will eventually go. And this can happen in clusters, or this can happen scattered throughout the whole head. Chances are, if you don't like grey hair, yours will be growing out directly where you see them the most, around your hairline or directly on the parting.
Of course. When it comes to colour, are there any ingredients that you feel should be avoided? I'm thinking about this a lot with my own hair, which is quite, needs a bit of TLC post-chemo. So I'm quite mindful of different ingredients, but or am I being too cautious?
I think it's a really important point. And I think there are so many ingredients that we use in hair colour chemistry. I do a lot of education work with hairstylists as well and hair colourists, and I'm keen to not ever demonize something, because what happens is we use the best ingredients and the best products that we have at the time. And then science, as is the same in Sophie's world and many other industries, science continues to move on and we get newer, better, often safer alternatives that we can use. So something that we hear a lot of conversation about at the moment is ammonia. And ammonia is kind of one of the main ingredients in often permanent hair color that has made colors effective for decades. And now there are newer alternatives that tend to give you better, more natural looking results, less of the kind of side effects that come with coloring the hair, like potential scalp sensation during the coloring process, or hair that really persistently fades warmer, or hair that just fades very quickly, no matter what shade it is. So one of the shifts that I've made is from using a color that's based on ammonia to a color that's based on something called MEA, which is typically just gentler on the skin and gentler on the hair, and gives better color results as well. So there are always little updates, and I'm always trying to stay ahead with what the new better options are.
Yeah, and I actually meant to ask you during our chat, is there a particular brand that you're aligned with in terms of hair color, or do you use all kinds?
So I actually had the opportunity 5 years ago, well, we launched 5 years ago, actually, so more than that, to develop a professional colour line with a brand called Evo, which is an Australian brand. So I learned loads more about colour theory and colour chemistry, and worked really closely with the chemists to help put together this new category of professional hair colour that gave all of the performance of the best colours that were available. We can all think of kind of those global names that are known for hair colouring that you can use professionally or in the supermarkets as well, but give all that performance, which is grey coverage and making sure the tones last for a long time and the hair's healthy and shiny, but with fewer of the compromises that we were making, like that colour fade, like this potential for scalp irritation and so on. So we worked on that, and that was a fascinating project for me. And to this day, it's a pinch me moment to know that I've been working on developing those colours with the chemists, and then see them right the way through to the end consumer using them on my client's hair in the salon.
Yeah. Oh, Evo. Right. Noted on that name. And Soph, you had a really good chat with Tom recently about the red tones in your hair. And I know this because you messaged me going, I love Tom. He's an amazing hairdresser. We've got to get him on the show. We had a great chat about my hair. So Soph, tell us about that.
If I'm right, though, that's not ingredient centric, particularly. It's more about, but Tom can explain, that I've had colour over many years, and that this accumulation of colour in my hair was leading to, as the colour faded, quite an underlying red tone to my hair, and bearing in mind I've got no natural red in my hair at all, it was getting really frustrating. So by the time I was going back roughly every 4 weeks, I felt like I had this underlying redness again. But maybe, Tom, you can explain it better than I can.
Oh, well, it's, you know, one of the most common challenges that people face with their hair colour that I notice, particularly when they're colouring their hair darker, is they want rich, dark, lovely, chocolatey tones, but without that red reflect, particularly when you get like natural sunlight hitting their hair, it can make it really quite reddish. And it can happen for a number of reasons, but most commonly, the reason is the layering of pigment again and again, building up, as you quite rightly say. But it can often come from the product choice. So when you're covering grey hair or covering natural hair and you want it to last as long as possible, permanent colour is really important. But when it comes to restoring the tone on the mid-lengths and ends, so say, for example, you're going for your root touch-up and your ends are faded a bit, one might think using permanent colour, because it's called permanent, is going to give the most longest-lasting result. Whereas in reality, when the hair's already been coloured a certain shade and requires topping up, using a demi or a semi-permanent colour will actually be better because of all of the chemical reactions that are taking place. And I don't want to bore you too much with colour chemistry and colour theory, but permanent colour lifts the hair and then deposits colour, whereas the other demi and semi colours would just add those pigments without relifting. And so it's the constant use of permanent colour and constant use of relifting before adding more pigment that makes all of these warm tones build up underneath the hair. And what we want to do is avoid exposing all those warm tones that, by the way, although they're not necessarily seen in the hair, there's a particular melanin that all dark hair is made of, all natural dark hair, and it does contain red melanin pigments as well as black and brown. Eumelanin and pheomelanin is what they're called. And so it's just making sure that the right product is chosen. But I think there's this misconception around the term permanent, that it therefore lasts longer, that it's therefore the best choice, but it's not always.
Thanks, Tom. I think that's a really great explanation and something I'm sure many other people are facing, and not just me. But I do have to say, my hair is looking a lot less red and lasting much better since my first session with you. So thank you.
I'm so glad.
I'm really happy with it. In terms of hair loss and hair thinning, and we're talking here about genetic or hormonal or stress-related hair loss, should we talk a bit about what might be available via a hair salon and then go into other possible treatments and avenues? So if it's quite minor hair loss or thinning, perhaps the kind that we all see as we get a bit older, almost everyone anyway, are there any products or technologies that we can access via our stylist? For example, I know there's a brand called Monpure, which I think is really great, and they have a follicle boost hair density serum.
Yeah, there's so much out there in the category of topicals that are outside of medication, right? So you're kind of topicals that you can buy off the shelf from various different brands that usually contain ingredients that might include natural ingredients that are shown to be DHT blockers or stimulating ingredients like caffeine. Some include certain essential oils, although there doesn't seem to be a great deal of evidence for those. I actually put all of those kind of topical serums in a similar sort of category as, you know, unless you're in the world of advanced kind of medicine or science, I think topicals can be really good at just helping keep your scalp happy and healthy. I wouldn't opt for those for noticing real thickening changes to the hair, hair loss, even the early stages of hair loss or just age-related hair thinning is one of the hardest things to treat. And you can spend a lot of time and money investing in making a very small change. And I think the best results come from bringing in multiple protocols and putting them together. So that's making sure that your scalp environment is healthy, using a really good quality, or at least very good at cleaning shampoo, using topicals that your scalp likes. So a lot of that for me comes down to texture. So rather than a specific brand or a specific ingredient, anything that's going to be available that's formulated as a cosmetic product, I would go for something that you feel your hair and scalp respond well to. Because what I'm noticing the most is that most people with scalp challenges have an impaired barrier function of their scalp due to various products or lifestyle factors. And that can then make the scalp less healthy, and that in turn can make the hair less healthy. So I think topicals are really great to tackle that. But it wouldn't necessarily, I'd feel I was mismanaging someone's expectations if I was relying only on a topical serum that you can buy from a cosmetic store to tackle any kind of hair loss.
Yeah, that's a very honest answer. Thank you. We actually covered about a year ago an entire episode on hair. So we'll put that in the show notes as a kind of a sister episode to this one, because we talked about some other options and we'd love your viewpoint. So can you talk us through things like minoxidil, finasteride, those laser or LED helmets that I see a lot on my Insta, PRP, exosome, stem cell therapy. I know that, is it the Callison Professional? That's also over a lot of people's social media feeds. Like, what is your opinion about all of those and more?
Yeah, gosh, there is a lot, and that they vary in how effective they are, and they also are great in oftentimes working together. I guess I'm going to start this by prefacing that if someone's experiencing any kind of hair loss or hair shedding, their hair's changing in any way, my advice is always to look at what's going on beneath, because that tends to come from somewhere. And a healthy body will grow healthy hair, whereas if something's, you know, slightly off in our body, then we'll notice it in our hair, because our hair is non-essential tissue. So our body prioritizes everything else, all those essential functions that are going on, and our hair can often get compromised. And so my advice, particularly before supplementing, for example, is to get some blood work done. I know Sophie does some amazing tests, and I think all of those are really valuable to really understand what could be at cause. But then you also have products or tools that are tackling the symptom more than the cause. So what I love about Callison, which you quite rightly mentioned is the newest and the thing that I'm most excited about within my domain, is using topical exosomes to basically send messages to our follicles to work like they did when they were younger. What's great about that is there are no reported side effects, and there is also none of that kind of medical intervention, because you're not treating the cause, you're treating the symptom of hair loss, which is great because it means it works for many different types of hair thinning or hair loss cases. But I always think it's crucial to look at what could potentially be going on underneath and really examining that. And so that's when kind of hormone panels and blood work is really valuable. When it comes to minoxidil and finasteride, these were the two drugs that were available, really, that were the most effective for hair loss for a long time. And finasteride works by reducing the buildup of DHT in the scalp, which is related to testosterone, which can cause the follicles to not work the way that they used to or the way that they should. And minoxidil tends to increase blood flow and be more stimulating in a way. So they often get compounded together, even in a topical spray, or they can be taken in pill form. Finasteride is sometimes complicated for use in women and is more commonly used in men, but there are, I mean, Sophie, you could probably speak to this far better than I could, but the two together have been very effective, but they're not suitable for everyone, and some people do get on with them better than others.
Yeah, and also, is it true that with minoxidil, that hair loss can be even worse when women stop using it, if they stop using it?
So there is something around the hair growth cycle. So we have different phases of hair growth. And what that means is there are stages of each follicle where the hair is growing, where the hair is resting, where it's shedding. And so if there are lots of hairs in that resting phase that are no longer growing, what intervention, and this is various types of intervention, so many hair loss interventions can encourage what can feel like a shedding of hair initially. And that can be alarming, particularly on very long hair, because we really notice it on the very ends where the hair is obviously longest. And what that's doing is it's shifting those hairs that are resting out of the follicle to make space for a new one to grow in. So it's actually this is when you start using these interventions. So it's actually very positive because it means things are happening and things are moving. But of course, if you have hair past your shoulders, you probably have 2 years worth of hair growth happening. And so if you have that kind of increased shed to begin with, it can take a long time before those new, thicker, healthier, exciting hairs that are growing in catch up with the rest of your hair. So it's quite a long journey in some cases. And then likewise, when you stop taking these interventions or stop using these interventions, there is nothing necessarily that says that your hair will stay as it was. So it's not that you'll lose more hair than ever before, but it's likely that your hair will go back to what it would have been without those interventions. And that can be a little bit alarming. That can be a little bit scary. So my advice is, if you're using a serious intervention like a medication or even like the Callison exosomes, that there, it is a bit of a commitment. The difference is if you're treating situational hair loss as opposed to progressive hair loss. So progressive would be something that's age-related, or something like male pattern baldness, for example, or something that happens more and more over time. Whereas situational hair loss is something like post a stressful experience or post an illness, postpartum, post chemo, those kinds of things. You can treat the hair for a while, get it back on track, and then think about phasing out. Whereas when there's progressive hair loss, there really is a commitment to keep up whatever protocol you've added.
What about supplements? So I love the Viviscal Professional Hair Growth Supplements, and I also use something called Trichotest in clinic, which is an advanced DNA test that shows any genetic characteristics that might relate to hair loss, but also likely responses to various micronutrients and medications. So you can then on a targeted basis recommend supplements or products. Have you got any thoughts about all of that?
I think it's phenomenal that you do that, because the one thing that I've learned when it comes to, frankly, anything to do with hair is that it is so bespoke and so tailored to the individual. There's a real case-by-case need for approaching these things. So the fact that you're testing what's going on in someone's body, what's going on with someone's DNA, means that you can be really targeted in the approach. And I think that is crucial, particularly when you're considering medications or considering supplementations of any kind. There's always a financial commitment, isn't there, from the consumer to purchase these things and use them, and you want to know that you're doing something meaningful and doing something good. And so absolutely, I agree, the first step should be, you know, doing those tests, seeing what's going on in your body, and then you can be really specific with the protocol that you implement.
I thought I'd give a quick sidebar on my post-chemo hair. So despite doing the scalp cooling, I still lost a good 70% of my hair. Although just over a year since my treatment ending, I now have a short bob, which actually I quite like. What really surprised me is that my straight hair came back crazy curly, and I do still have curls at the very ends. The roots, I'm so glad to say, are coming back straight. So I just want to reassure anyone listening that things do improve, and it really is just a time thing, which Tom, you reinforced when we spoke. Do you have anything to add though, Tom, on chemo treatment and hair?
It really can come back differently initially, and it's a really challenging time, and dealing with your hair at that time can feel like a lot to deal with. And so just giving yourself that time and that space and that patience is so important. The way that I think of it is your follicles have obviously been put through the ringer, you know, alongside the rest of your body in many cases. And so they're not quite fully awake yet. So when treatment is finished and when the hair starts growing back in, the follicles sort of are warming up a little bit. They're not quite sure. They can't quite remember how they worked before. And so the different texture that comes through, often a different color can come through. Sometimes the hair can just grow through incredibly fine and fragile initially. And you can almost see that follicle optimizing and warming up as the strand gets longer and the density of the hair gets thicker and thicker. So it can be a really unexpected time with the hair responding in unusual ways. But you're absolutely right that in the majority of cases, as time goes on, your original hair does tend to fade back in. And certainly with some of the protocols that we can use now, we can encourage that as well.
What would you do or suggest for really damaged hair? For example, someone like Fee, who's still rebuilding that structure after a huge insult to her hair health and with the chemo. And Fee and I have previously talked also about women of colour and textured hair and braids and the trauma to the hair that can cause. And of course, for many of us, there's heat styling, straightening chemicals. So in terms of specific products, what's in your emergency kit?
Gosh, I could do a deep dive here. It's funny, you mentioned textured hair, and people don't realize that textured hair is some of the most fragile hair, because under a microscope, it looks like a ribbon, like a flat ribbon that obviously coils up very tightly. And so that makes it quite fragile. Whereas hair that is completely straight and completely, you know, straight all the way down tends to look like a circle if you cut a cross section, which then makes it stronger and more resilient to chemical processing, for example. But when it comes to healthy hair, no matter what the texture is, I think about it in three parts. And this is down to the molecular structure of healthy hair and what it needs to really look and feel healthy. And look and feel is important, because looking healthy is different to feeling healthy, right? We want that glossy, silky slip to the hair or that bounce to the hair. But we also want to know that we can manage it and brush it and color it and style it safely with it having that resilience underneath. And so the cornerstone of all of this, and the reason actually that, you know, I was so excited 10 years ago when I launched Olaplex to the UK market with that innovation, is that the cornerstone is working on a part of the molecular structure of the hair called the disulfide bonds. And that's where the hair gets most of its strength from. And so for rebuilding hair that has become weak or fragile, no matter the cause, I believe the foundation should always be treating those disulfide bonds. And Olaplex has that patented compound that does that like nothing else does. So it's an extremely valuable place to start. And I'm talking specifically about the Olaplex treatments, like the number 0 and number 3 that you can use at home, or the number 1 and number 2 that you can use in the salon in a professional environment. They have many products now, and some of them are shampoos, some of them are treatments. You're really looking for the treatment products to rebuild the hair in a really noticeable, effective way. But that's just one part of the kind of triangle of healthy hair as I see it. You've got the disulfide bonds, you've got the proteins in the hair, the peptide chains, and then you've also got the lipid profile. So you've got the lipids and this, which gives the softness and the moisture and the nourishment in the hair. So you also have products that include peptides and amino acids and proteins, and that gives the hair more strength. But very differently, they work very differently to products that tackle the disulfide bonds. And then as the top coat, you have that moisture, you have the oil containing products, you have the products that contain the good kinds of silicones and all sorts of ingredients that leave the hair feeling silky and shiny and stretchy and give it the elasticity and stop that bristle feeling on the hair. So you need all three in balance, really.
Great answer. And staying on products, again, in terms of brands, what shampoos, conditioners, serums, other products do you really rate? We'd love your list. And I guess linked to that question as well, what ingredients should we be looking out for, either good or bad?
Okay, so maybe I'll categorize them in those three pillars, that triangle of healthy hair that I was talking about. So like I mentioned, when it comes to disulfide bond repair, Olaplex is the most effective by far. When it comes to products that contain proteins, there are heaps and heaps on the market. So you're looking at masks, typically. You want the product that's sitting in that conditioner step of your routine that are left on for 5 minutes or more, because the proteins that we use now in hair care are most commonly hydrolyzed proteins, and they take time to go in and do their thing to the hair's structure. There's an amazing product also from Evo called Mane Attention that's got a lovely, beautiful balance of protein, but it's got a little bit of moisture in there as well, so it's dual purpose. And there's a brand called Virtue that are doing really interesting things with protein technology. They've got an alpha keratin molecule that's very similar to what's in our hair, which the protein is that our hair is made of is called keratin. And the hair responds very well to that from a protein point of view. When it comes to the moisture and the softness and the suppleness, my number one, I think, that makes the biggest change in the shortest space of time would be the Philip Kingsley Elasticizer. Now, this has been around for decades and is bit of an iconic product, and it's a product that you use before you shampoo your hair. And I always think about a hair care routine, and I think about, you know, where do people prioritize their budget? And I would say, if you're considering a product that is designed to be used before you shampoo and condition your hair, chances are it's going to have some science behind it that is making it last throughout multiple washes, because you know that you can shampoo it away and the results still remain. That says to me there's some quality formulation there and you're going to get a really nice result from the product. So Philip Kingsley Elasticizer for moisture is a really good choice. They also have the Elasticizer Extreme for really coarse and really dry hair. And that's a really good option too. Heat protectors is another category of products that I think is often overlooked and is so crucial. And even if it's not protection from heat, but protection from the elements or just a leave-in product of some kind is really, really valuable. I love the Evo Headmistress product, which is almost like skincare for the hair. You can leave that in your hair. In fact, Sophie, I think I've given you that one to try. It's a really nice choice for detangling and making the hair silky, but leaving it lightweight. And actually, another Olaplex product, the number 5 leave-in, has heat protection, split end sealant, and it's also helping you work with the texture of your hair and detangle and make it healthy too. So those are the ones that jump to mind that I think are really worth the investment.
Okay, if people are being budget conscious, where would you send them?
I always think that the French pharmacy brands do a really good job with kind of baseline hair care. So I think it's really important to remember what we want our products to do. And a shampoo, for example, its primary purpose is designed to clean your hair. And so many brands out there want us to buy magic shampoos that do all sorts of things, like repairing and smoothing and adding shine or strengthening or whatever it might be. And many of them are very good. But at the end of the day, what we want from a shampoo is to just leave our hair clean leave our scalp reset and balanced, lift away dirt and debris and styling product residue, and leave our hair reset to then receive ingredients from the conditioner and then whatever products we use to leave on our hair after shampooing it. So French pharmacy brands do really budget friendly and very good quality shampoos that are almost considering the scalp as much as the hair. And I think that's a really good place to start.
I'd never thought of that. Thank you so much. We'd also love any at-home blow-drying and heat protection tips and hero products again. And also, what do you think about the Dyson range?
Oh, I love the Dyson range. And the reason that I love it is because it takes heat damage a little bit out of your own hands. I think sometimes in our busy lives, the tendency is to get that hairdryer, turn it right up to the highest speed and heat setting and just blast through your hair as quickly as possible because we're all busy. And what's really good about the Dyson tools is it measures the temperature that it's putting out many, many times every single second. So it means that it stops that overheating. It stops you from getting so hot that you're causing real damage. Whereas if you've got a hairdryer lying around that you've had for a long time, chances are the heat element in it is maybe a little bit rusty, is a little bit tired, and you could be putting out much hotter heat than you realize. So they are very much, in my opinion, worth the investment. And they do feel like really good quality pieces of kit. So they've got that longevity and they're what I use absolutely. When it comes to tips for blow drying, I think the best thing to think about and something that is kind of obvious when you know it is start at the front of your head. I think when people sit down and think about styling or blow drying their hair, they think, okay, I've got to do this properly. I've got to use my sectioning clips and I'm going to start at the back and I'm going to work the way forwards in a similar way to many hairdressers. And in fact, if you start at the front, you're using your, you know, highest levels of energy and your most interest when you're working on the bits of the hair that most people are going to see. So I recommend blasting the hair a little bit first to get rid of that excess water. Start around the front of the hair, then go to the crown. And then with whatever energy you've got left, you can dry the underneath of your hair. And if you run out of time or you run out of energy, then your hair is still going to be looking good.
That's a great tip. Actually, and one other quick question, which heat protection brands or products do you use or recommend?
My thing with heat protection is pick the products that you can use the most of. So products that are in creams or oil forms, you can't tend to use that much without making the hair feel heavy. So spray in heat protection is always my preference for the most protection. I love the Color Wow Dream Coat. It's a very lightweight product that gives lots of protection from humidity as well as heat. And Evo do a product called Icon Welder, which is very lightweight. And you can use that on wet hair and dry hair. So it's really good, not just before blow drying, but also before direct heat from straighteners or curling irons.
What about scalp health and things like a sensitive or itchy or flaky scalp? Again, any tips or products that you really rate?
I think in many cases, it's all down to barrier function. And so while there are some scalp conditions that are, you know, really hard to treat, like psoriasis and, you know, seborrheic dermatitis, and some people have eczema in their scalp, then those require a different approach. But in many cases, if it's just a little bit of irritation or a little bit of sensitivity, or you notice, particularly in colder weather, the scalp's getting a little bit flaky, feeling itchy, it's often down to barrier function. And one of the things that I ask people to think about is imagine if we washed our face with a non-nourishing cleanser or just a basic cleanser and then left the house, particularly on a cold day, without anything on our skin at all, right? Not any serum, no moisturizer, nothing. Our face would very quickly feel tight and it would feel dry and it would feel uncomfortable and probably a bit itchy too. And so with the kind of modern lifestyle that we all lead, and if you live in cities and so on, I think our scalp often just needs that little bit of extra care. And it's something that sounds obvious when you say it this way, but we shampoo our hair, we condition our hair. Most of us don't condition our scalps because we've learned that if we put hair conditioner near our scalp, it's going to make the hair feel heavier at the roots and perhaps feel like it needs to be washed more quickly. And so thankfully, there's this whole category of scalp products that are coming out now that are not over-promising that the hair will suddenly grow back twice as thick, but they are providing that very lightweight nourishment to the scalp and can be easily dropped through and left in the hair without that feeling of weight or residue. I love the Living Proof Dry Scalp treatment for that. It's a really beautiful, lightweight formula. Olaplex just launched their number 0.5, which is their scalp longevity treatment, which is really exciting because it's balancing the scalp, but it's also supercharged with great ingredients that are going to keep that hair healthier as it's growing out the scalp as well. And so something that's going to really settle on the scalp comfortably and not weigh the hair down. And there are many more products coming into this category now. So it's quite an exciting time.
And we've also been stalking your Instagram. It seems you're also a fan of various skincare technologies and treatments. I know you've previously had Softwave with Sophie at her Harley Street clinic. What's your current routine in terms of products, treatments, and maybe any tweakments?
Oh, I had the most incredible experience coming to Sophie's clinic. It was so great. And Softwave was a really exciting treatment for me to have because I do pay attention to what's happening in aesthetics and the cosmetics world as well. And so that was a really, really exciting one. I'm really enjoying polynucleotides at the moment as well, particularly under my eyes. I'm really seeing the difference they're making for fortifying the skin. And I had spent a lot of time having Botox and filler in the past, and I'm excited that we've got more coming into the group of what can be done. So I love that side of things. When it comes to skincare, I'm a huge fan of red light as a home option as well as in clinic. So I have a red light panel, a whole body red light panel that I use at home. And that was something I've been doing for the last 5 years. And actually one of the reasons why I'm such a kind of advocate for the red light hair growth devices that we're seeing. So I use red light as many times as I can a week, but I'd like to say I do every day, but I don't quite have the time. I am very good with my SPF. You'll be pleased to know, Sophie. I know that it's something that people struggle with, but I think finding an SPF that actually feels like a valuable step in your skincare regime. I think some of the ones I was trying to use a long time ago felt like they almost ruined everything that I'd put underneath. You know, you have those lovely serums and products, and then an SPF on top that isn't the right one for your skin can make you not want to use it. So I spent a lot of time trying different SPFs to find the one that my skin liked the best, and I'm now quite religious with that. And I try to keep things as streamlined as possible. So I use a really good vitamin C in the morning. I use a really good retinol vitamin A product at night. And I try to, it's difficult because I'm very lucky that I often get sent skincare to try. And I notice that if I go off piste for too long and try lots of different things, sometimes my skin gets a little bit upset. So I try to keep consistency with all of that. And one of the brands I work with that we've spoken about, Calisim, who work on hair growth, and they also have a skincare line, and they've got an eye product that is probably the only eye cream that I've ever got on with. It's called, I think it's Eye Contour Lifting Cream or something, and I love the consistency of that. So that's been a new add to my regime that I'm really enjoying.
What about any alternative or complementary therapies? Are you into any of that?
I actually trained in transcendental meditation in 2019. And ooh. So I use that as a tool. And I will say transcendental meditation, they're very strict that it's 20 minutes every morning and every evening. And I absolutely fail when it comes to that. However, what I have learned is having it as a resource and having it as a tool when I feel the need to settle has been really valuable. And actually, Sophie, something that you and I spoke about before, which we share in common, is we're both really excited by the NeuroSim technology, aren't
yes.
we? So I use the NeuroSim now when I do my transcendental meditation to habit stack those two together. And I travel a lot for work, and I often find myself utilizing those when I'm on flights.
A lot of people talking about the NeuroSim. And what's your morning routine like? You've covered off skincare, thank you. But for example, do you take any nutritional supplements? Do you have an exercise regime? I know it's all time. Are you strict on diet? Like, what would be like an average morning like for you? And I guess evening as well.
Well, I'm definitely a morning person, and I find that my motivation for productivity decreases gradually throughout the day. So my mornings are very precious to me, and I always make sure that I've got 2 hours at home before I have to leave to do anything. So that can sometimes mean waking up quite early. It varies a bit. I wear many hats in my career, and my life is quite different on every single day. So I try and have those 2 hours at home, during which I do the thing which I know you're not supposed to do. But the first thing I do when my alarm goes off is I open my phone and I look at my emails, because I work across the US and Australian time zones, and there's often stuff that's come in overnight, and that with one eye open, often I read through those and decide what my day is going to look like outside of what I already have scheduled. But when it comes to supplements, I've actually been again, I really like the streamlined approach. And so no matter what you think of him, I know he's a controversial character. Brian Johnson, who's the US billionaire who's, you know, spending all this money on trying to live forever, he does offer a supplement protocol called Blueprint, which basically takes all of the investment that he's made and learning about, you know, which parts of his protocol are good for the general population. And so I did blood work with Randox at the beginning of last year, and then started taking his supplement protocol. And I did find when I redid my blood work 6 months later, there were a couple of areas that were suboptimal and they had improved through really that being the only intervention. So I really like the Blueprint stack supplements because I haven't got to think about researching different ones. I just know that they're put together and they've got a lot in them, which I couldn't list out now, but they've got lots of various things, some commonly known, some less commonly known. And I just use that to know I've covered all my bases. And then I suppose I'm lucky that I do have a PT that I train with if I'm in the UK 3 times a week. And so that often makes up my morning routine because I am physically unable to exercise in the evening for some reason. I only, if I'm going to do it, it has to be first thing in the morning. And I've recently added, which I think is quite interesting, and I know the body of data is still increasing on this, but I've bought the Catalyst suit, the EMS suit. So it's like a full body microcurrent or electrical current, I'm not sure, workout, where you combine it with an app. So it's a bit like having a Peloton with the Peloton app, but you put this suit on and you get zapped a bit while you're doing bodyweight exercises. And apparently it's the equivalent of 2 hours in the gym in just 20 minutes. So that often makes up my morning routine when I'm not with my trainer.
I love this. You're like the male version of Sophie. You two should be best friends.
That's not the first time I've heard that, funnily enough. Yeah.
So a few quick fire questions. Do you prefer people to show up to an appointment with freshly shampooed hair?
Great question. Not necessarily freshly shampooed, but I'd love it to not be dirty. If it feels clean, that's fine. Doesn't need to be freshly washed. Sometimes freshly washed can, you know, make your scalp more likely to be sensitive after certain colouring products. So if it feels clean, you're good.
Okay. And do you have any thoughts on dry shampoo?
Dry shampoo is a fantastic tool, but it should not become a crutch. So if you need to push out an extra day between shampoos, go for it. Easy advice, if you've used dry shampoo, make sure that when you next shampoo your hair, just shampoo it twice and spend a few extra seconds just to make sure your scalp's fully unburdened from the ingredients.
Do you prefer it when clients chat to you, or do you just find that exhausting?
Oh, well, I think I'm probably a, what are they calling it, an introverted extrovert. So I'm very good both ways. And one thing that I will say is that for every client that comes in really wanting to catch up and chat and really have that social moment, there's another client that's very happy sitting working or just taking a moment for themselves and resting. And so I say come as you are, because I'll see multiple people in the day. And I find that you learn pretty quickly, you respond to who you're with. So either is fine. It's your time to switch off and relax and be pampered for a bit. So you can use it as you wish.
Do you mind when clients bring in photos?
I love it when clients bring in photos. And I think there's a lot of pressure on people to use the right words and the right language. And I think as soon as you bring a photo, it becomes much easier to find what you're looking for and to explain what you like. My rule is bring in 3 photos, ideally of different people, not all of the same person, because if you bring me 3 pictures of Hailey Bieber's bob, I'm going to know that you just want to look like Hailey Bieber rather than me give you her bob. But 3 different people with similar hair type to you, with the hair worn in a similar texture to the way that you wear it. And that's really valuable for me to then see what you're drawn to and what you like.
Love that. That's a great tip. Who has been your most memorable client?
The first thing that springs to mind is I have this phenomenal and very creative client who I still look after, actually. She's international and she had a big event that she flew me out to do her hair for in California. And she had collaborated with this incredible artist, and I wish I could remember their name, but they had created a custom headpiece for her using all sorts of things like feathers and beads and, you know, jewelry elements, and woven it all together. And I was tasked with weaving her natural hair in amongst this incredible headpiece for this incredible event that she was doing in California. And it was a bit of a whirlwind trip because I was there and back pretty quickly, but it just really sticks out in my mind. And I think people often feel a lot of pressure with their hair, but I love working with people who have a really strong vision of how they want to present to the world and helping that vision come to life.
Love that as well. So you're a global ambassador for Olaplex, Evo, Current Body, Callison Professional. I know you do a lot of work on the training and educational side too. You're also often working with magazine editors on shoots. You seem to travel a huge amount. How do you manage your time and how do you stay so zen?
I do wear a few different hats, and I think the switching between the hats sometimes can come with a bit of tension, and I'm learning more and more over time about how to manage that. To be totally honest, I'm a huge advocate for talk therapy. I've had talk therapy weekly with a psychotherapist on and off for 10 years. And in the early days, it was unpacking your childhood and all that stuff. And now what I find really valuable about it is it gives me a place to process all of these different categories in my life and my career that are important to me and unpack them and reorder them. And in a busy life, I suppose the advice that I would give is, whether it's with a professional or whether it's just journaling or time with yourself, just giving yourself moments every week that are planned for, where you can sit down and reorder everything, is one of the things that I know helps me operate at the level that I want to. And then the second is, I always have my mum's advice in my ear, which is just take one day at a time. And sometimes now, when I'm doing lots of different things on the same day, sometimes it's just take one job or one task at a time. And that really helps me to be present and stay in the moment. And it's so simple, but it really helps me.
Oh, I love that answer. Thank you, Tom.
And finally, in terms of travel, where's your happy place, both in London and the UK, but also abroad?
Gosh, I live in central London, and I love living in central London because I've got Regent's Park on my doorstep, but then Oxford Circus the other side. And I just love that juxtaposition between being able to be in the middle of the green when I want to, but also in the middle of the busyness. But when I'm not in London, I would say my happy place is probably Sydney, Australia. I probably maxed out my visa each year for almost, probably more now actually, than 10 years. And part of that through work, part of that for personal travel. And it's my second home and away. And similar to London in many ways, but very different in other ways. And I certainly feel a different level of calmness. And I've learned over the years that having distance from your normal life is quite valuable to give perspective. And I always come back from longer trips away with new ideas and changes that I might implement. So Sydney's my happy place for sure.
Thank you so much, Tom, for joining us. For all of you listening, you can follow Tom over on Instagram at TomSmithHD. You can also find out more about Tom at tomsmithhd.com. And you can also book an appointment via Billy Curry Hair in London, which is on Chilton Street, one of my favourite parts of town. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom. You've been amazing and inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy talking to you both.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.